This is Tom Taylor. I'm the writer of Injustice, piles of Star Wars books, and The Deep, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people, color they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 77, the only comic book podcast that has two post-credit sequences. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, DC Entertainment moves to California. Let's hope the airline loses the new 52 in transit. Then it's the trailer for X-Men Days of Future Past, because time travel has worked out so well for Marvel lately. Plus, all the latest news and reviews, and our kick-ass pick of the week. Of course, Thor the Dark World film special. All this and more after these increasingly bizarre breaks. This is Behind the Panels.
It's the Wayne Foundation, central headquarters for Batman and Robin. Three floors of crime-fighting equipment, plus a penthouse. There's a fully equipped communication center, a computer laboratory, Batman's trophy case, a working elevator, a crime laboratory, and more surprises than even the Joker can dream up. The Wayne Foundation comes with everything shown here. Assembly required by Miko.
I want one.
You'll have to hit up eBay to get one of those nowadays.
I like the idea of a working elevator, like, and a broken elevator, and an out-of-service elevator.
With a little sign on the front that says, out of service. Yeah. Where did you get those wonderful toys?
Well, apparently from Mego.
From Mego.
We're a man down.
We're a man down. We killed Dave.
Well, we always joke about firing Dave. No. We didn't fire Dave.
No, Dave's off busy making films this week, doing all sorts of wonderful things. Couldn't make it along this weekend, which is just as well because it's bloody hot in the studio today.
Man, we are going to... people have been putting up with us talking about how hot it is in the studio for, what is it, 6 years now?
Yeah.
We are going to buy an air conditioner for the studio. It is coming in the next few weeks. If you would like to contribute to that, go to geekactually.com and we will actually take any donations you'd like.
Well, we this week, of course, we did go to spend some time in air conditioning. We went and saw a movie.
Yes.
So we saw a big movie. We've both seen it twice. So we will be talking about that movie in the second half of the show. So we don't have a film show at the moment, but at least we can still geek out over the big ones.
Well, we do have a film show. It's just kind of erratic.
Yeah. And in fact, we won't be recording this one this week because we're a man down and that would be the third of the show.
And GMC really is a three-hander, and with having a third of our crew out.
But the one thing we do have time for, Dave, because time is very relevant to this next segment, which is the Wayback Machine. This is the vintage clip of the week.
Oh, cool.
Do not harm the girl. I make no move.
I've waited a long time for this victory over you, Thunder God, and I want to enjoy it.
Jane, be brave. I'll save you somehow.
Stay where you are, Thunder God. Follow us, and the girl is doomed.
I dare not follow. I cannot gamble with Jane Foster's life. But how could they have known to capture her? No one on Earth suspects that I love her. On Earth. Ah! Suddenly I realize who my true foe is. There is only one who could be behind Hyde and the Cobra. Loki! This time nothing shall save him from my vengeance.
But at that moment in Asgard, home of the legendary Norse gods...
See, noble Odin, how cowardly Thor has grown! See how he allowed those two evil ones to escape because of a mortal girl? A girl you have forbidden him to marry!
I thank you for advising me to view my son on the planet Earth, Loki. It makes my heart sad.
I almost didn't turn the mics back on.
Can you imagine Anthony Hopkins delivering the line? It makes my heart sad.
I like the fact that Loki sounds like he should be twirling his mustache.
So, I have captured the girl.
Now it's just, how desperate are you?
Yes, yes. But, you know, Tom Hiddleston's just dreamy.
He is dreamy. We've both met Tom Hiddleston and he's dreamy to be in a room with. Yeah. Oh, Dave, look, we this has obviously been a big week for geeks. Big movie.
Especially in Australia.
I mean, Australian, as of today, the day we're recording, which is Sunday, the something of November. The 4th of November. I think it's made about $45 million around the world, which makes it the biggest year for Disney to date.
This is going to open huge.
And it hasn't opened in the US yet.
Yeah, when it opens in the States, it's going to open huge.
So, and it's been getting terrific reviews, and rightly so. We'll be giving it another one shortly. But before then, let's set up a segment we call What We've Been Reading.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
And we definitely are going to read between the lines. Now, I'm going to get us started really quickly and just say that I bit the bullet. And
ouch.
No, it hurt. And I caught up with Infinity.
Oh, yeah.
Then a new issue came out, so I'm now behind again. But I did catch up, and I did see the spectacular moment with Thor that you were talking about, where Thor was on his knees and the hammer, and it's just...
You make it sound so cheesy, David.
No, you know what I mean. Where he takes out the builder, which is it is an extraordinary scene.
It is one of the big moments.
And everything I've ever said about Hickman for that brief moment, I took back.
Which is unfortunate because the next issue, which was issue 5 of Infinity, the one that came out this week, was particularly water tready.
Right.
Which is a shame because you had this big kick-ass moment, one of the best of the year, definitely.
Especially with Captain America afterwards saying, now we fight back.
You've got them all wandering around saying, it's an Avengers world now. And it's kind of like, they mentioned Avengers world about 15 times. Coincidentally, there's a new book coming out called Avengers World.
Of course there is.
In, I think, January, February, something like that. So it's seems like an ad for that series. It seems like an epilogue rather than the penultimate chapter. And I have no idea. I have no doubt that Infinity is going to end on something big, even if it is cliffhangery, because it leads us directly into the Inhumanity thing.
Right.
So, you know, it's big. But the thing is, I was a bit disappointed with the next issue of Infinity, but overall, it's been a pretty big event. It's been pretty awesome.
Look, and it is epic in scope, and we do like the Marvel Cosmic Universe here, and that it really is digging into that Marvel Cosmic Universe. And it really is an amazing scene when you see Thor come walking out of that ship and they say, we're sending in our negotiator, and it's Thor. And there's actually a point where you've got your Kree and you've got your Ronan the Accusers and you've got all the... who are basically saying, is he the best man for this job? And you've got Captain America going, yes, he is.
And it's the point where the Avengers had lied to everyone and just sort of said, we're going to surrender.
Yeah.
And the next issue is actually interesting because everyone's saying it's an Avengers world and stuff because someone actually comes to the realization, you know what, we've got these assembled forces from all over the universe here, but at every turn, every time we've had a minor victory, it's been because of the Avengers. You small group of people from Earth.
Which has been a running theme in the Marvel Universe for some time, which is even though Earth is young and even though Earth isn't as sophisticated as your Kree or your Skrull, Earth always seems to be a pivotal point. There's something about Earth.
In fact, this week's Guardians of the Galaxy, there's a thing like that. They all arrive back on Earth. Beautiful issue, by the way, if you get a chance to read it. Francesco Francavilla, who's the guy doing Afterlife with Archie and the Black Beetle and all this stuff, he does this week's issue. And they're arriving on Earth, and someone actually says, this is it? This is the planet everyone keeps fighting over? they actually make fun this week of his catchphrase, of Rocket's apparent new catchphrase, I murdered you, because he says it again. And someone says, really? That's his catchphrase now? And Peter's like, I know, I've spoken to him about it. We'll have to see if he can change it. So that's good. Look, the other big event, of course, was Battle of the Atom.
Which I also pushed through because I was behind on that. And I couldn't finish it.
Okay, well, I finished it. And it ends on... Look, minor spoilers here, but I won't say who, but someone leaves the X-Men and goes over
Wolverine?
To the... No. Okay. Someone leaves the X-Men and goes over... A long-time member leaves the X-Men and goes over to the Uncanny X-Men. And that's after there's an almighty fight between the X-Men, some other X-Men, and S.H.I.E.L.D. And S.H.I.E.L.D. is revealed to have, spoilers, people, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s revealed to have their own Sentinels.
Right.
So that's kind of something they realize they have to deal with in the very immediate future. So that's kind of led into presumably new books and new titles, but they don't immediately say, next week you have to go and pick up whatever. It's just kind of ended. It's basically a slight change in the status quo. A little bit of an anticlimax, but not a bad ending.
Right, right.
The other big event that ended this week was an event that I'd forgotten was going on, but I had been reading it, was Lights Out. And the reason I forgot that it was an event, because like the best Green Lantern events, you read it without realizing it's something different to what's happening every month. It was just part of the Green Lantern universe, and it was a damn good story. It was basically Relic, who was literally a relic of a previous universe that had died out because they'd sucked all the lantern juice, basically. They'd sucked all the light thing. They realized that there's not an unlimited reservoir of light spectrum. He came there to stop our universe, well, you know, the current DC universe, from doing the same. But he did so through trying to, like, attack... He tried to attack the lanterns, basically, all of them, and he drained all their batteries to preserve the energy. So he kind of is a bit like a villain, but he was doing it for a good reason. So it's kind of... It was an interesting villain to have in there, but ended up being one god almighty fight by the end of it with all the different coloured spectrum lanterns. Guy Gardner's a Red Lantern now, apparently.
When did that happen? I got to say, I haven't read a Green Lantern since Geoff Johns' last. So I read that and I haven't actually gone back to it.
And
so,
to his credit, Robert Venditti, who's taken over, has done an amazing job. He got straight into this big arc immediately and didn't waste time, which I think was a good move. And like Geoff Johns, he's pretty much said, you know, turned his blinkers on to the rest of the DCU, and he's doing his own thing. Oh, okay. And it's the same continuity. It's not like, okay, new writer, let's take the opportunity to bring this into the New 52. Let's just do our own thing. So very highly recommend Green Lantern, all the books, if you get a chance, because he's writing two of them. He's writing that and... I think Green Lantern Core as well.
Okay.
So definitely check it out. Definitely worth a read.
All right, I'll go back and revisit the Green Lantern world, because after Geoff Johns' run was finished, you kind of went, I'm done. Because
it finishes in Green Lantern Annual number 2, which means we're around to the annuals again.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that this week. We have annuals out for Superman where they bring back Hell, because that was such an inspiring story.
I think there's an Aquaman one.
Really? That seems everybody else is ignoring him. So.
Well, there might be an Animal Man one as well. But yeah, there's been a few annuals over the last few months. It is amazing. It's been 2 years.
The ones out this week were Action Comics Annual, Aquaman Annual, Green Lantern Annual, and Nightwing.
Ah, that's right. Nightwing was the other one I was thinking of. There was an Animal Man one out.
There'll be more coming. Ago. That's this week.
Yeah. Look, I want to mention very, very quickly a couple of things. Probably the biggest book that was out this week was Sandman, The Overture, number 1.
I can't wait to have a look at this.
This is a prequel to the Sandman book that we did way back in issue whatever it was. I think it was probably our second or third issue, third or fourth, very, very early on. And this is set before that. This is him being attracted to some goings-on in 1915, so it's kind of leading up to the point that he gets trapped under the glass.
Cool.
But it's also dealing with all the dreams, dream kings across different universes, the different iterations of him. It's a mind trip. It's amazingly, I mean, it's Neil Gaiman, so amazingly written.
Always going to be a mind trip if it's Gaiman.
And they've got J.H. Williams III on the art, who's the guy that did all the Batwoman art, you might remember from the initial run of that.
Yes, yes.
You can't imagine a more perfect match. This guy has... perfectly, you know, there's one sequence where all the panels are like framed in someone's teeth, you know, and it's just like you can't imagine a better fit than that. This is, look, you have to read it to get the most out of it. I put up a review. It did incredibly well because Neil Gaiman retweeted it.
Very nice.
So I was very excited by that, but go and check the book out. It was one of those books where I heard people on Twitter saying things like, I hadn't been into a comic shop in years, went in because Neil Gaiman wrote a new book. Went to pick that up, came out with $80 worth of comics. So this is the kind of thing that the industry needs to do more. Get these people in who have these massive followings writing really good books, suddenly attracts people back to the graphic novel, you know, format.
Rather than sticking Angela in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Although she did, I think she is going to come back in Guardians.
Of course she is. Marvel's obviously paid good money for Angela.
And I think they're going to sandwich her in sideways.
They'll put her in every book if they can help it.
Look, two quick mentions before we start talking about a little bit of TV stuff, which is Damien, Son of Batman, came out this week. It's a part one of a four-issue miniseries. It would seem like an Elseworlds book set somewhere in the future, where Damien's a bit older, Batman gets killed, and he goes off on a path of bloody vengeance he kills Mr. Freeze, he kills all these major things. But it's kind of done a little bit ham-handedly, and it would be an Elseworlds book, except it says the New 52 on the cover.
That's kind of weird.
So that is a bit weird, and no one can kind of work out where this sits because, well, Damien's dead. We know Damien's dead. Talia turns up as well. She died at the end of Batman Incorporated as well. So we don't quite know where this is going. So I'm interested. I want to read the other three just to find out where this is going.
All right, you've piqued my curiosity with that one. So.
And look, finally, I just want to give a shout-out. Review on behindthepanels.net, so I won't talk about it too much here, to Homebrew Vampire Bullets. It's been out for about a month or so, but it's an Australian anthology, which I read in time for Halloween. But it's got some great people in there, like Christian Reed. It's got a bit in there by previews for stuff by Doug Holgate, who's a big local artist, and I'm really looking forward to what he does. Probably my favourite piece in there was by Ryan K. Lindsay. And an artist named Louis Joyce. They do a book. They do a story called "The Many Harold Holts of Time and Space." For those of you outside of Australia who may not know who Harold Holt is, Harold Holt was a former Australian Prime Minister who, while Prime Minister, went missing off the coast. He went swimming and never came back. And there's all these conspiracy theories around that.
My favorite is the one where they say that a Russian submarine picked him up.
Well, this posits the idea that all of those theories through space-time wibbly-wobbliness came true at the same time, and so at once he's an Atlantean king, he's a Russian spy, he's a steampunk adventurer.
I have to read this
book. It's brilliant. I'll
have to read this
book. You can get it they put it on sale after my review, in honor of the review, which was really nice, for 99 cents, but you can pick it up for $1.99. Definitely worth your money. It's a 60-page anthology. Go get it. Support the local.
I will pick that up this afternoon.
Look, the other things we have to talk about, of course, are the TV shows.
Best episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week ever.
Yes, it was. It was. Certainly had more depth than the last one. No, there was no episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, which is already taking a mid-season
Just
break.
Kidding you. No, I actually took a break for Halloween, apparently.
I did. But the two episodes that were out this week were, of course, The Walking Dead, an episode called Isolation, which it's getting pretty good. I'm quite getting into that.
I'd say I finally started Walking Dead for this season.
The first episode's not terrific.
It's not. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting, because after hearing you and Dave talk about it, I was kind of like, where are we? I didn't mind it. It was okay. In fact, I quite liked, we don't do spoilers, I know that, but I quite liked, just for those who have seen it, the scene where Rick is talking with the woman in the woods.
Yes, yeah.
I thought that scene was actually very interesting, and it was actually an interesting metaphor for everything else that's going on.
Well, thematically, I think that's where that season's going.
Yeah, and I thought that was quite interesting. I, as I've said before, with Walking Dead, I like to try and build a head of steam on them, and then I watch three or four. After Sophia, I watch them in batches. Mm. So I've only watched the one, but how is it going this week?
Look, no, it was really good. There was some, and I have forgotten her name, woman with grey short hair. I don't know why I forgot.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. If only we had some sort of interconnected network of computers to look this up. Anyway, she's given a lot
I'll
more.
I'll look it up while you're
She's
talking.
Given a lot more character. Not that we're doing any. We don't cut this in post anymore, so I can't even go back to say remembered what it was suddenly. She's given a lot more character depth. Some of the kids that are in there that were sort of annoying me in the first episode, they've got some reasons for being there. There's a bit of a whodunit happening at the moment, but that whodunit doesn't last too long because we kind of find out who did it by the end of that episode, which is quite good. But there's all these elements coming on. So everyone's kind of the ensemble's
Carol.
Working. Carol, thank you. Everyone's working quite well together. Because now, Carol was a bit of a doormat in the first couple of
episodes. Carol was very much a doormat. Because if she was that character, what was her driving force was the fact that she was a beaten wife. So now that you don't have the husband in the scene anymore, I don't think they knew what to do with her.
Because by the second or third episode, and this is not a spoiler anyway, she's starting to train the kids up.
You see that in the first episode.
She's, she's training the kids up to defend for themselves and not telling Rick just yet. Although it ends up being a non-issue. But she actually, there's one girl she pulls aside and says, "You're weak." You know, so it's kind of like, yeah, right on. They're giving her some teeth. So it was really, because it's a tougher world now. I think they're dealing with the fact that.
She's also tougher from the last season. Remember when she got locked in that room?
Yes.
All by herself. So she's had to harden up as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think this is, she's come to that realization herself that she's weak. So I think every time she tells somebody else that they're weak.
She's talking about herself.
And that she doesn't want to have to be in that situation again. So, look, I think this is the promise of a character-driven serial finally being delivered upon.
Four seasons in, though, is it too late?
Look, 115 issues isn't too late, you know?
Well, there is that, too. Now, of course, the big news.
Yes.
What was Arrow like this week? Because I am ashamed to admit it, I have not watched this week. I've been working night shifts this week, so I haven't had a chance to actually watch Arrow because... if I watch it without my son, he will kill me.
No, look, so look, I jumped on it as soon as it came out, and
I'm watching it tonight.
So. Yeah, look, you're worth the wait because all I'll say is Canary Arrow team up.
Oh,
so
yes.
Finally, a lot of those characters are coming into it. There's a lot of references. I'm pretty sure they mentioned. There was an accelerator mentioned in there as well, so it's kind of a reference to what's going to be happening with the Flash.
That's
sort of happening there. So they're sort of planting those Easter eggs.
And I read an interview with the creators of the series the other day, and they actually said, "Nope. We know what we said, but Flash will be in costume. There will be superpowers.
Yeah.
It's like so. This whole doctrine of no powers has been thrown out the window for this.
Yeah.
He is going to be." The Flash. It's not going to be some, person in a red jacket or something,
No, it's fantastic. And even the island stuff is getting, more interesting and more parallel to what's going on. So it's only a matter of time before Deathstroke turns up in
I think it's only
Starling
a matter of time
City.
Until we also have Arsenal.
Oh, and there's a big reveal at the end of the episode, which is very cool.
Bigger than last reveal?
Yeah, just as big. It is to do with another character from the DCU making an appearance.
Right.
And... look, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think Marvel could teach DC a thing or two about movies, but I think DC could teach Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a thing or two about how to keep the fans happy and make an engaging TV show at the same time.
I'm a little sad about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because although I'm still watching it and I'm still enjoying it as a show, it's just there's not a lot of substance.
No. I mean, that's the thing. And I'm not a huge fan of the two main leads. I don't think they...
Or the scientists.
Or the scientists,
Those four characters are all write-offs, basically.
Yeah, they could get rid of them all and just have a next season when How I Met Your Mother's over, just have Maria Hill as the lead.
Or you can make a you could make a series with Ming-Na and Coulson.
Well, here's the thing. Joss Whedon, executive producer, next season, How I Met Your Mother, it's cast is free. So you bring over... Kobe Smulders.
Yep.
You bring over Alison Hannigan.
Oh, yeah.
Because, she's a Whedon alumni. You got yourself a Whedon show right there, buddy.
Yep.
So, that's what I'm looking for. You bring in a superhero.
Yep. Oh, you could actually bring in...
Oh. Think about it.
Doogie Howser. Jesus Christ, his name's gone out of my head.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Thank you. God, it's too hot in here, I thought
I'd let you dangle for a while.
We could bring in Neil Patrick Harris because he's not averse to doing television. He's worked with Whedon before.
Yeah.
And he could be somebody.
That Neil Patrick Harris could be somebody.
I mean, in the Marvel Universe, we could make him somebody.
I'm sure he could. Yeah, well, there you go. I'm excited for this fictional season we just made up.
We're writing a better show in our heads.
Well, for reviews of actual shows, head over to behindthepanels.net and read all our latest comic book reviews and movie reviews and all that sort of thing. You can also find us on comicbookroundup.com, where you can find out what critics say from all over the web.
Yay.
And for some actual news of seasons that are coming up, I think it's time for some news headlines.
Oh,
Evan.
Yes, please.
Let's do it. DC Entertainment has announced that they will be leaving their traditional New York home to join the Warner mothership in California.
Cool. Writer Bill Winningham has announced his semi-retirement, bringing the long-running Vertigo title Fables to a close with issue 150. That's a bit sad.
Oh, and Fairest will be ending as well around that time. Marvel planned to crossover, finally, between Thor the Dark World and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in an upcoming episode called The Well.
Maybe it's our fictional show. AMC has unsurprisingly renewed The Walking Dead for a fifth season, as the current season continues to deliver record ratings.
Meanwhile, Telltale Games will release a second series of their successful adaptation of The Walking Dead in video game form.
Marvel has announced the miniseries Winter Soldier, The Bitter March by Rick Remender and for February 2014.
Old typos are fun,
aren't they?
Mark Waid will conclude his Daredevil stories with Daredevil Road Warrior, featuring Mad Max. No, sorry. A digital comic with Peter Krause on art beginning in February 2014.
Charm's Shannon Doherty, Holly Marie Combs, and Brian Krause will have a mini reunion in Australia as the lineup for Oz Comic Con 2014 continues to grow.
It's going
to
be big next
year. It's
going to
be huge.
That's a funny one. Aaron Taylor Johnson is said to have been confirmed for the role of Quicksilver in Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron.
Cool. San Francisco will be transformed into Gotham City on the 15th of November with thousands of volunteers by the Make-A-Wish Foundation for a 5-year-old leukemia patient, Miles Teller. That is so awesome.
That is very, very, very cool. They do amazing work, those guys. And finally, the big trailer that came out this week is X-Men Days of Future Past. Let's have a little listen from an excerpt from that.
What's the last thing you remember? I had a glimpse into the past. You're going to have to do for me what I once did for you. You'll need me as well. Side by side to end this war before it ever begins.
So, I wake up in my young body and then what?
Find me. Convince me of all of this. It's going to take the two of us.
And where do I find you?
A different path. A darker path. Logan, I was a very different man. Lead me. Guide me. Be patient with me.
Patience isn't my strongest suit.
No, it isn't. No. Patience isn't my strongest suit, too, because I just had to sit through. Wolverine, I have to tell you that I'm an elf.
This trailer left me completely underwhelmed.
Yeah, look, I mean, the imagery is quite cool, and I cut out the bit from that trailer where it's all music and just images flashing and yay, lots of X-Men.
Still didn't do anything.
It's still like no, and I look, X-Men movies can go either way for me, and
I just think we successfully rebooted this franchise with First Class, and kind of went, okay, let's go back to that, and because the other franchise was kind of dead in the water,
yeah,
and then to suddenly go, well, that was really successful, let's bring back all the old fogies again.
I have a feeling though it's going to be mostly the First Class cast because it's Wolverine traveling back in time,
and all it is. And I know it's cynical of me to say this, but all it is Fox basically saying we need to wedge Wolverine into First Class.
But they could, I guess they didn't actually meet them until.
Because, you know, I mean, they had that one little cameo, which was like the most successful cameo of all time.
Yeah.
When they walk in and he tells them to, you know what?
The word we can't use on this clean podcast.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the point is that they had that one little cameo, and you just know that, and I think it was actually another podcast, which I won't mention who it was, but another podcast where they basically said Fox will continue making X-Men films as long as they have Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Once they don't have Hugh Jackman anymore, they're not going to care.
No, that's true.
And so they're going to wedge Hugh Jackman into anything they can as Wolverine.
Yeah, I reckon he'll be in the Fantastic Four reboot.
Wedge him in somewhere.
Yeah. He'll be one of the Fantastic Four.
Wolverine joins the Fantastic Four. Awesome.
What are you going to do about it, Bob?
Look, there was two trailers that came out this week. That was one. The other one was for the Lego Movie.
Oh, yeah, it was actually three trailers, but the Lego Movie probably...
Which has Batman and Wonder Woman in it,
yeah,
it was by far the better trailer.
It ran rings around. Actually, the other trailer that came out that had Batman and Wonder Woman in it was the one for Justice League War, the next DC animated thing, which I didn't pull because we're not going to do trailer fest.
No.
Interestingly enough, a lot of people have commented on the fact that they've replaced Aquaman in that movie with Shazam.
Well, yeah, because there's still this perception that Aquaman is dorky. And even though...
Even after Injustice.
And his very successful rebooted comic book, yeah, where Geoff Johns has basically rewritten the thing, and Injustice, everybody said how awesome he was, Warner Brothers still has no time for Aquaman.
Oh, well. Because everyone knows who Shazam is and loves him.
Yeah, well, everybody watched the 70s TV show, didn't they?
No.
Shazam!
I used to have that here somewhere. Oh, I do. Here we go.
Shazam!
That one. See, you can't fault us. We're quick.
Quick.
Just like that.
Even though we're melting.
There was a time we would have cut that out, but no, we want to show you what it's real podcasting.
Absolutely. We do everything live now, baby.
live to hard drive.
Live to hard drive.
Oh, look, David, before we melt completely, why don't we just kick on with the pick of the week?
Why not?
Let's do it.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Some believe that before the universe, there was nothing. They're wrong. There was darkness, and it has survived.
It's gonna happen.
I gave you my word. I would return for you.
You face an enemy known only to a few,
known only to one.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help.
If we do nothing, they will destroy us.
You even think about betraying him?
I'll kill you. That was from New York.
I like her.
I like her too.
And I like this movie.
Me too.
It was, our little intro every week says, whatever it is, it's awfully funny. And it really was. I think that's the one of the things about Thor the Dark World is that it took all the things I liked about the first one, which is the humor and the action and so forth and the characters, and just... took it up.
Game of Thrones fired it.
Yeah, Game of Thrones fired it. It took it up 1,000%.
Yeah, look, this is the perfect second superhero film. So if you're going to do superhero films, this is the perfect one. X-Men 2 did this. Spider-Man 2 did this. You basically go, I have finished with the origin story.
Mm.
We don't have to explain who anybody is now. It's all the same people, and all we can do now is get into it and show what these people can actually do. Some people argue Superman 2 did this as well, but I don't think Superman 2 is nearly as strong a film.
No.
So, but with this film, we basically just get into it. We have Kat Dennings still being funny. We have Jane Foster doing what Jane Foster does. We have mentions of past films to set ourselves in time and place.
Mm.
But Asgard is already established. Odin is established. Thor is established. We just get into it.
That's what I love about the opening part of that film. And, you know, for a brief second there, when Odin's giving his opening monologue about the thing, I thought I had visions of Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Because this is the first Marvel cosmic film. You know, this is the first time they've gone properly cosmic.
And can we say we've established the Marvel cosmic universe now?
It's out there and we're loving it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I've got to say, this is probably the best thing about this film is that it actually establishes a comic book reality on film. The first couple of films, certainly the first phase, been very much about pulling in an audience, hooking them in. So there's been that balance between comic book geekery, a little bit of fan service, but making it relevant to mainstream audiences so they have something to hook onto as well. So whether there's a love story at the center of it, as there was in the first Thor, there was kind of a romance there, or whether, and certainly it was in Captain America as well, there was that element between the unrequited love, you know, or the big swashbuckling adventure, you know, whether it was just, you know, Robert Downey Jr. being awesome, and they had a love story element to it as well with Pepper Potts, you know, whether it was that hook that kept people in and brought them in to be interested. Now they've kind of said, right, we can just do what we like now because we've got the audience, they're here for the characters. Let's turn everyone into geeks.
Yeah, and let's just give a quick roundup for the people who haven't seen it yet. Basically, this time round, the Dark Elves have returned something called the Aether, which is this almighty power they want to unleash and basically plunge the entire universe back into darkness, which is where they came from.
Mm.
And it's up to the Asgardian God of Thunder to basically stop it. And that's basically it. That's the plot.
And we get this magnificent opening with Thor tidying up Loki's
mess from the first film.
Yeah. The first film and from
New York.
They keep mentioning. I love it how they never mention, you know, the Avengers per se. They always just talk about New York.
New York,
which is something they do in S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
Yeah, yeah. They just go, the events of New York. Yeah.
And that's what I really like about this film. I like about the approach to this film. And it's something that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could really learn from. It's like, they've established, like, we know this is a comic book universe where stuff's happening. We know Iron Man's off doing his thing. We know Cap's off doing his thing and what have you. We're launched into this movie with Thor running around the various realms. Mm-hmm. We get to see most of the nine realms at the start of this film. And if we don't, there's a sequence at the end where we see the rest of them. you know, the fact that this is a living, breathing comic book world, that things are happening when we're not looking at it.
Yeah, and there's actually, I think somebody mentioned to me, you know, the same as Iron Man 3, when the issues of Iron Man 3 started to unfold, they go, well, where are the Avengers? We've established all these Avengers. Comic book readers know that the Avengers only come together when it's something that they can't deal with individually.
Mm.
So something world threatening, basically, the Avengers pulled together.
You could argue that the threat in this was kind of world threatening.
But interestingly enough, I think with this, the events unfold so
quickly
that there wouldn't have been time for the Avengers to
assemble. And if it's like there was a comic book prequel to The Avengers, Nick Fury's Big Week, where basically said that all those things that were happening in the Phase 1 films were happening in the same time.
Correct.
So if the same thing's happening now, which means while Thor's having his adventure,
Iron Man's having his,
so he's busy with, you know.
And I love the fact that in this there's actually mention where they say S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't answering. But if you've seen the trailer for Captain America, it looks like they're pretty busy at the moment.
Yeah.
It's like, I think if you go by that theory where they're all happening at the same time, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s pretty busy.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out as once the whole phase is complete and we pull together for another Avengers film.
Well, my understanding is that, and jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV episode that'll cross over with this will be cleanup. Which will be S.H.I.E.L.D. coming to clean up the mess.
Greenwich, yeah,
what's happening in after the mess has been left behind. And people always stay to the very end of the credits.
Yeah, this is not a spoiler to say that in this particular film, there are two post-credit sequences.
So there's one in the middle of the credits and one at the very end of the credits.
Absolutely. So you must stay. And in both of the screenings that we were at, the first one we were together, and then you and I both saw it. I don't know about your second screening, but people got up and left.
No, actually, my second screening, people stayed put. Everyone
nice
knew.
To see, finally.
Yeah. Was, mind you, it was IMAX. I don't think they can really move unless somebody else does. But everyone stayed put for that one. No, look, I think that this is, you know, look, I'm going to make a big call. I really love this film probably more than almost any of the others. I think this is probably the most pure comic book film that
it's right up there with the first Captain America for me.
Yeah, I know Captain America has always been your favorite.
Yeah,
the first Iron Man has always been my favorite. I do rank the first Thor very highly because
so do I.
I love the humor, and that's something that I think, you know, not enough is said about the Thor films because some people will find that annoying. Some people find that humor annoying, but look, you know, there's references, just little things that people who like the first film will love. Like at one point, Kat Dennings refers to the hammer as Mew Mew.
Yeah, again.
in a very clever way.
I love the fact that, I mean, Kat Dennings is not one of my favorite comedians. If you've ever seen Two Broke Girls on television, it is a terrible show.
It's horrible.
It is horrendous. And she's horrendous in it. But it actually occurred to me in watching Thor, the reason why I think she works in Thor is because, A, she's toned down just a little bit.
Mm.
She's still kind of over the top, but she's toned down a bit. But in Two Broke Girls, everybody is speaking a punchline.
Yeah.
Everybody is basically overacting and throwing out. Every line is a ba-bum-bum. And it's not funny, and it doesn't work.
But
whereas in this, she's playing against straight people.
She's playing us.
Yeah, she's us, and it's all straight people around her, so she comes across as being humorous.
Yes.
Because suddenly she's just the comic relief.
Although we have to say that Stellan Skarsgård, God, that's hard to say.
Eric
Selvig has some amazingly good comic moments in this.
Oh, absolutely.
He is... He's pantsless for a fair chunk of it.
Well, can I just say that Chris Hemsworth has some great comic moments in this as well. We walked out of this on the second viewing. I went to see it with my lovely wife, Katie, and my son, and we came out of it. And she actually looked at me, and it was something I won't forget, where she said, how is Chris Hemsworth possible? He is this impossibly handsome, impossibly charming, huge buff guy who's just charming.
Mm.
And he has this absolute winning smile about him, and he's charming. And you just fall in love with Thor because he's all stoic, and then he'll say something really funny like, who's Richard?
Yeah.
Hang his hammer on the wall, which is one of the great sight gags.
That got a big laugh in both screenings I went to. And there was a couple of universal laughs in both screenings I went to. There is a cameo in the middle of this film, which if we open up our spoiler section a little later on, we might talk about the cameo.
That could be our post-credit sequence.
We, the cameo got a massive laugh at the IMAX screening.
Yeah, same as my second screening as well. There's a big laugh on that. And I think that's really wonderful because it was a gamble doing that.
Well, it's actually, the reason it's wonderful is because it's a recognition that the people who go and see that film have seen the other films as well. Yes. And it's not obviously the first screening we went to was media, but the second screening was a public audience. So it was great that the public have got that recognition that they're part of this world now too. It'd be like viewing, you know, another character turning up in the middle of a comic book.
And Marvel's Marvel has created such a beautiful universe, and this we harp on this a lot, but it is so absolutely amazing what they have achieved.
Let's talk about some of the technical aspects of this film, though. The sheer scope of this film.
Did you see how many special effects technicians there were?
If you're waiting till the end of the credits, you're waiting through a long
My wife looked up at the screen and went, that's a lot of names.
look, this is a phenomenal achievement. I think Marvel have sort of said, right, we've got to do Cosmic. Audience have had some bad experiences with cosmic comic book films in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you, Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Yeah. I almost said Green Arrow. Looking at you, Green Lantern. Green Lantern was, you know, misguided. It wasn't terrible, but it was misguided. Thor got it right. Thor got the balance right. We got a taste of Asgard and the Rainbow Bridge and all that sort of stuff in the first film.
But this went all out.
This is amazing. And Heimdall. Idris Elba really gets to come into his own. Actually, to say, everyone who was kind of like, with the exception of the Warriors 3, who I thought were a little underused.
Although, I still really like them. I really like the way that they're portrayed in the film.
The moments were really great. There's some really nice moments
and
between.
We replaced Fandral, and we didn't even notice.
I know.
In fact, Zachary Levi, can I just make mention? He is so good in it as Fandral that my wife didn't even know that was Chuck from TV show.
I agree. Like he, you almost wouldn't. If I hadn't been told in advance that he'd been replaced, I just would have assumed it was just the same actor.
Well, she knew it was somebody else, but when I said that was TV's Chuck,
she was Josh Dallas in the first one.
Yeah. Well, she actually went, no. She goes, when did he become handsome?
No, it's great, and there's some really beautiful moments between just looks between Jamie Alexander and Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm.
Just little side glances in there. Tom Hiddleston, and a lot of people have commented about this. Hiddleston is probably the best portrayal of Loki yet, because finally we get a Loki who's more the trickster,
and he's likable,
and he's like
he's not just a bad guy.
They have to make him likable because Loki is more integral to Thor's plot this time around, and so not just likable. There's some really emotional moments between him and Thor, some which remain unexplained at the end of the film, which, again, if we crack open our spoiler section.
Well, I do want to do that because I want to talk about that ending because there is something, there's more to that ending. And this shape of things to come.
Yes, definitely. But the minor characters were great. Rene Russo gets to kick some ass in this.
Yes.
Which is wonderful, wonderful to see. Anthony Hopkins seemed even more astounding as Odin. Like, he seemed even bigger somehow, like just like muscly. They've really built him up. He really projects.
Although he is looking very old now.
He was looking old, and I think they've set up by the end of this film for the possibility of him, moving on, because they keep talking about Thor becoming king, which is where the first movie started.
Yeah, exactly.
Eventually Thor will take over Asgard, which is great. Like, you know, they've built that into the series because Anthony Hopkins retired a few years ago.
Do you know what I would really like to see? I would really like to see in a third film, and it's never going to happen.
Mm.
But what I'd really like to see for the third film is the events of the Michael Straczynski run. I'd like Asgard to come to Oklahoma.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past them. They've done that now. They've established that Asgard and Earth are intertwined. Like that there is a connection there. That there is a thin line between the worlds. And while obviously they can't do the same thing they did this time around, there's no reason they couldn't have Asgard fall to Earth, and that would be fascinating, particularly by that stage. By the time we get to a third Thor movie, maybe characters are intermingling from the other films and what have you. I
want to see more of the Heroes 3 because I think they are really well cast. I think they're doing a great job. And when I say Heroes 3, I do include Sif. She's not one of the Heroes 3, but no, I do include
But it's always
her.
Sif and the Warriors 3.
And the
3,
Warriors
yeah.
3, that's right. And
I'd like to see a Journey into Mystery movie then, which would be her and the Warriors 3. On an adventure, because she in this film proves that she deserves a leading role.
She is great, and she's actually better in this than she was in the first one.
Well, she barely had any screen time in the first one.
But she just had presence in this one, even though she doesn't say very much.
Just a look, yeah.
Just the way that she's attired, her look, everything about her had this incredible presence.
You know what? I reckon in the first movie she was Sif, a warrior. In this she is very much Lady Sif.
She's Lady Sif,
because there's a celebration scene where she comes out and she's wearing the furs and she's talking to Thor and the trading conversation is equals.
Yeah. And when she walks into Jane Foster and she says, "You're coming with me," and she goes, "Okay."
Yeah.
It's like...
you know, and you get... I mean, actually, even the first time she's introduced is when they're fighting the war on one of the Nine Realms. I can't remember which one it is. And she's battling the hordes of people off, and Thor arrives and says, and she goes, "I had it under control." And he goes, "Really? Is that why everything's on fire?"
You know, just, and then when the big monster shows up, she goes, "All yours."
All yours. Yeah. You know, she's wonderful, and again, as someone we interviewed a couple of years ago, seeing her progress on screen,
yes,
is wonderful, and I think she deserves. There's actually been talk this week because she was interviewed and said, "Look, everyone go and see the movie because if it sells well, there'll be a third film."
Mm.
Like she basically,
and you know what we're also setting up as well
in
the Marvel Universe. One of the standard characters she was actually an Avenger for a long time was Valkyrie.
We've never
established the Valkyrie in the Thor movies at all, but you could actually merge the characters together
and actually bring
Sif down to take the place of Valkyrie if you wanted to do that. Because she is such a strong character.
I've got a little piece about it on the site, but go and check out, it's a link to a Forbes interview where she talks about Thor, the possibility of Thor 3. She talks about a spin-off movie with Lady Sif. But also, really interesting, apparently she's been in talks with the Distinguished Competition. And she said she knows the plot of Batman versus Superman. There is some talk Wonder Woman with her, and she's being very mum on that. Now, could she do both? I don't know. She would be a wonderful Wonder Woman.
She would be. And I'm just wondering, there was also talk this week again about the Deadpool movie again. Ryan Reynolds was out there talking about it again.
And the director was too, or one of the producers was too.
He's worked for both companies.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why. And... do we have anybody else who's done crossovers? I'm just trying to think. There's got to be another one somewhere around.
But Chris Evans.
No, Chris Evans was the same company. Oh, no, he was with... Well, but it was still Marvel, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he was two different characters. So
true. Yeah. I'm thinking between DC and Marvel.
Yeah. No, you're right.
As Wonder Woman, I can see that.
Yeah?
I can definitely see
it. Look, I think she'd make a wonderful Wonder Woman.
And she's a great big tall woman, too. So.
And look, you know, it's been said many times, but... God damn it, let's get some female superheroes happening.
And good ballsy superheroes. I mean, we're not talking about just eye candy. Let's get in some strong female...
If Captain Marvel is not one of the Phase 3 films, Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel does not form the basis of a Phase 3 film, then they're mad. You know, they really need to get that happening because that is a ready-made movie to go right there.
Especially considering that you're not going to get any strong female... Well, I'm speaking out of school, but I don't think you're going to get a big, strong female role model out of a new Fantastic Four movie but looks like they're casting nothing but 20-year-olds in it.
Yeah.
So all the rumored casting we've heard so far in this new Fantastic Four has been awful. So
and if they're doing an origin story, Sue Storm's inevitably... not the strong character she becomes.
And the latest rumor is that the Johnny Storm would be played by an African-American, which means they're not actually brother and sister. So I'm not entirely sure what Fox is doing.
Interesting.
With that. Interesting. So, but this is all rumor at this point. We've had no official announcements of cast. But every name that I've seen bandied around about Fantastic Four has been a joke. So anyway, we wait and see. That being said, Marvel's still doing it right.
Marvel.
New opening Marvel Studios logo, by the way.
Oh, how awesome. Cool is that?
Yeah. Awesome.
Wait till you see it in IMAX, dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It just looks great in 3D. Yeah. And can I also say that Marvel has the best post-convert 3D house in the business?
Yes.
Because every one of their films has been a post-convert, and every one of their films is not shabby.
3D. Yeah, like even on a massive screen where you'd notice the thing looking a bit shabby if it was bad 3D. No,
it's good 3D.
There was real depth of field in every shot.
Yeah, and they've done that with every one of their films that's been in 3D so far. Mm. They have got one of the best post-convert houses. Oh, by the way, I also found out why. In the end credits, you'll actually see Film Victoria come up. Mm. I found out why. Apparently, one of the special effects houses was in Victoria.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I was wondering what the Australian connection.
Because there was a lot of special effects houses worked on this thing. And yeah, one of them is Victorian.
Should we just say, before we go into a spoiler zone, do you want to do the spoiler zone now, or do you want to
I'm going to do it as a post-credit sequence.
Do it in the post-credit sequence. Alrighty.
Stick around after the music.
There'll be a post-credits, there'll be a mid-credits sequence, and then there'll be something at the very end of the credits. So stay tuned for our, in the spirit of the film.
We have no idea what it's going to be, but you
two post-credits sequences. No, not really. Look, let's just say, obviously if you're listening to the show, you want to go and see this movie, go see it. Go see it multiple times.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. Look, honestly, I think this is I couldn't imagine the cosmic universe coming to life on screen better than this. I am so excited about Guardians of the Galaxy now.
Yeah, well, now that we've seen how they're going to handle cosmic, now we've seen spaceships and stars, we've seen crossover universes, we sit there looking and go, I'm ready. I'm in. Give me a talking raccoon now.
Yeah. Ready to do it. And you know, they do that because they have creatures that weren't human throughout this film. Christopher Eccleston, we should mention him.
Oh, yes.
The Doctor was in this, which is probably why all of his elves look like Cybermen. He was fantastic in this real kind of... he was under heavy makeup for most of the time.
But it's his voice. You can hear his voice.
It's his voice. He brings a real... Even though he doesn't have a lot of dialogue, even though a lot of stuff happens when he's not on screen, he brings a real gravitas to the scenes that he is in. And well,
it's a real threat.
Good casting.
Yeah, right, you really do feel a real threat from Malekith's
even
people.
Though he has a white ponytail.
Very inspired by Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, Alan Taylor directing this gave it a real tangible quality.
Well,
those sets.
He made Asgard look lived in now.
Well, apparently they were the biggest sets ever constructed for a Marvel film, certainly.
Right.
A lot of that stuff was practical. He did as much practical stuff as he possibly could, and it showed.
Yeah. So, I think Kenneth Branagh did a great job realizing Thor to screen, because Thor was a hard sell to bring to screen, and I think he did an amazing job.
Kenneth Branagh sold it to the public.
Yeah, absolutely, but I think what Alan Taylor did was he made it believable.
Yeah.
Alan Taylor came, he made it look lived in, he made Asgard kind of dark.
And he doesn't contradict what Branagh gave us, because you still see that shiny vision of Asgard, but then you kind of go to the left.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the throne room isn't a ceremony, so it's all kind of dark.
Yes.
You know? Whereas in Branagh's, it was a ceremony, so it was all lit and shiny and sparkly. This is like Asgard on day to day.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that. I really
do like
that. You
see the people hanging out having, sword fighting in the corner, just training, or you see people hanging around.
I love this new effect too, where all the Asgardian swords have got like electricity across them, where they're kind of igniting when they light up. I like that. That's really cute.
No, I expected to enjoy it. I didn't expect to enjoy it this much.
Mm. As I say, as far as being pure comic book goes, and if you're going to look at comic book adaptation, for me, this rates right up there with Captain America, because I think, I'm not saying Captain America is the best film. See, this is where it gets very tricky.
No, it's a good adaptation.
I think Iron Man is still probably the most solid film of them all. But I think when you look at it from a pure comic book adaptation, that whole feeling you get when you read a comic book, that's why Captain America was so right for me. It was just the perfect adaptation. And this rates right up there with it. This is perfect. A perfect Thor film. This is what I wanted to see.
I couldn't say better myself, David. So I think it's a great place to end. So, David, why don't we hit up briefly the girl from Ipanema?
You mean this?
That's the one. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Look, just one little bit of feedback we got this week. Someone sent us a copy of their
live to hard drive, people.
Hello. A copy of their comic called Grubby Little Smudges of Filth. which is available on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you can find it. That one is, you'll find that in, I think, about six different parts on there. It's by Daniel Reed, written and illustrated. It's a great little sort of a fable, but it's sort of got a bit of... it's about a land ruled over by a very sort of self-indulgent king. And there's a prisoner using whatever filth is at hand, and he makes these beautiful artworks. And I've been reading that, and, you know, it becomes, it sort of unfolds as this kind of quirky little, very sort of British sense of humour to it. So, but it's kind of got the epic sort of feel of a Game of Thrones episode, but with a little bit tongue in cheek as well. So,
interesting.
Really love the art style in it there. Go and check that out. Go and support this guy, because we receive comics from various people saying, hey, will you review my stuff? We get them from official sources. We get them from people who have just written things. So sometimes it takes us a while to get around to reading them.
We get a lot of email. Can I just say, we get a lot of email of people saying, here's my Kickstarter page.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't do every Kickstarter page that comes up.
Let's put it. We want to be huge, but we're not huge, so we can't, you know, put something up about all of them. Otherwise, we'd just be a support this page. One Kickstarter I will say that you should go and support is, I think it's called Teenage High School Zombies or something along those lines. I'll double check the which one that is. But that's James Brower, who did the artwork on The Deep.
It's
got a new one coming out. But yeah, as you were saying, David, we can't support all of them.
But what we do want to do is, anytime you've got something actually done, something produced, by all means, we'll have a look at it.
So that the thing you should go and support on Kickstarter is Teen High Zombie Squad, which looks fantastic. So they're aiming for 30,000. Let's hope they get it. You know, keep sending us stuff, though, because we do want to read everything that's out there. We may not always be able to mention it on the show. We may not always be able to give it a proper review. But we'll help you out in any way we can. And certainly if you're getting picked up, you're being published or what have you, we want to hear from you. We might want to talk to you on the show as well. So please keep sending them in. But don't, you know, we may not get back to you.
We may not always respond straight away. We get a lot of email in about all sorts of weird stuff.
But thank you so much, Daniel. I'm loving that book. So, David, you got a copy too? So it's
another
reading assignment for you.
I have so much to catch up on. I'm in the middle of rebuilding a studio. So, you know, eventually we'll get there.
it's looking good, people.
It's getting there.
You can't hear it. Well, you can hear it because it's sounding a little better.
The red curtains are coming today.
Ooh, very excited.
they don't improve the sound quality,
it'll be like a David Lynch film in here.
But we are going to get the air conditioner hopefully in the next week or so, and then we will all stop bitching about being hot. So.
Well, if you do want to hear yourself on the show, get on to the website, go and hit us up on Skype, leave a voicemail message at Geek Actually.
Or if you're in Australia, you can call 8011-4167. That's area code 02. It's 8011-4167. That's our call-in number. That's our Skype number.
Just leave a voicemail message and something nice and short, bit of feedback, and we'll play it on the next episode.
And I actually went and paid all the bills last night, so it all works.
It definitely works. if you'd prefer just to write to us, just write to feedback@behindthepanels.net. Or drop us a line on facebook.com/behindthepanels. We're always looking for feedback there. Of course, if you want to support the show in any other way, go to iTunes, go to the Behind the Panels feed or the Geek Actually Super feed and leave us some positive feedback. Leave a star rating or leave us a nice little review there. It doesn't have to be very long, but it absolutely means the world to us if you do that. Of course, we do have another show. We have Geek Movie Club, which is a little bit erratic at the moment.
It's still finding its feet to start with, and we haven't quite decided whether we're going to be fortnightly or monthly with it or what's going happening with it. And you know what? When the studio cools down, maybe we'll want to do more.
Yeah. And look, yeah, we will definitely be doing more podcasts in the next year, though. We are building towards a live show.
Let's throw that out there now. That's actually a really good idea. In about May.
Probably, yeah. Early to mid-May.
We haven't got an exact date yet, but just to prime you people so that you know, around that time, we are thinking about doing our 100th show live with an audience.
So that'll be here in Sydney.
Yep. And it may be at a bookshop. It may be at a venue. We don't know yet. We haven't locked anything down yet, but we're looking at having guests. We're looking at doing prizes. We're looking at doing all sorts of things for this live show. So just keep that area clear if you want to come and see us do it live.
And like, if you are interested in coming down to a live show, let us know, because then we can actually know how much response we're going to get, and we can start pitching this to a few people.
Absolutely. Throw it on a tweet, throw it on our Twitter accounts, throw it into email, whatever. Just let us know if you are interested in
a live
show.
So where can we find you on Twitter, David?
You can find me at David McVeigh on Twitter.
You can find me at DVDBits on Twitter.
There you go. So there's our Twitter handles. We also have an app behind the panels, but does anybody read it?
That's our official one that's to put out our feed. But look, you know, if you want to find out what we're really doing, go to the two ones we just mentioned.
Absolutely. And as I said, we've got the voicemail, we've got the emails. I think there was one other thing I wanted to mention, which is, oh yes, just a reminder that, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you do want to throw donations down for our air conditioner, head over to Geek Actually. There's a donate button on the side of the page. Geek Actually is still a parent of this, so that's where the donations are holding. You don't have to. We're not begging or anything. We're just saying if you want to help us out at all. And there was something else I wanted to mention. No. I think that's it. And hopefully David Longo is back next week.
Yes. Hope to see you then, David. And next week we'll be doing Avengers Endless Wartime, which is a new graphic novel by Warren Ellis.
That's right, yes.
So very much looking forward to doing that one. It's been only out about a month or so, definitely a brand new one. Go and check that out, read it. Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.
So, you know, I was really thinking about that mid-credit sequence. By the way, spoilers, people. Spoilers and all. That mid-credit sequence where we actually had directed by James Gunn. I don't want to give too much away, but just to say that if that's the shape of things to come for Guardians, we're heading for some pretty strange territory.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the mid-credit sequence is... Well, let's say, it's directed by James Gunn. It has one of the characters from Guardians of the Galaxy in it, and it teases a pretty big storyline from... The Marvel U that may have been around. It may have involved a big villain who may have been teased before.
Absolutely.
So I just
throw that out there and say, do stick around for that mid-credit sequence. All right, so spoilers and all, people. We just have to talk about the end of the film for a second. So if you haven't seen the film, stop it right now. Come back to us later on. But I just wanted to mention, so everybody left? Everybody left who has to leave? Good. Yeah. All right, so we just have to mention that last scene between Odin and Thor, which is a wonderful scene, and then punctuated by that sting in the tail, which of course... being Loki.
Loki has taken Odin's place.
And that's where we're left. So we know that Thor 3 is going to be based in the comic books, mind you. This is actually an arc from the comic books where he basically kidnapped Odin.
Earlier in the film, we thought Loki had been killed.
Yep.
And not only is he still alive, he's taken Odin's place. And where's Odin? So that's where we're left with at the end of that film, apart from the end credits sequence that we just mentioned, and a very, very cute little...
Tale at the end. But that ending, I just sat there going, that's how you end this film.
Yes.
All right, see you all next week, people.
See you then.